Romolo, reel four.
In my heart, I can hear the words of tribute to the dead. You leaving without regret, heroes of our nation. You, whose were a discount of life, are now lying in your youth. But you know that your death will pay for all the bad that's happened. This third is probably a small consolation. You're not allowed to say, let parents live with your last breath. You can't say that where there is a perished soul, there will always be the cry for our nation, for there will be a prayer that we should have our country for all that we have had to give for it. So although there is a gag in your mouth, although the street around you is dead and empty, and in front of you there is a unit with guns, you are still shouting, Poland lives, in your throat, if not with your mouth. We do not know where you are buried, but we know where you spend your last minutes, and that is where we will give you our tribute, we'll pay you our tribute. We will not be short of arms, and nobody can stop us from paying tribute in our hearts. We pay you tribute, heroes of our country. We pay you tribute all together. We pay tribute for your suffering, of which we shall speak, and the wind will carry our words across the world, and everybody will hear of the suffering of the Poles. And everybody will pay tribute to the country which has given so much blood and which has not been broken. And one day, when there is still liberty in the world, we will say that the sacrifice of your young days has helped to bring it to us. This was in the summer of the year 1943, in the winter of the year 1943-44. Now it's June 1945. Many months have passed since these awful days, and much has changed. Those who fought so hard did not survive the happy moments. But today, the places of their execution are surrounded by flowers and tributes. There are no longer neighboring houses from which people looked silently, praying to God. The houses have gone. The ruins show that once upon a time, here were the buildings of the long-suffering and proud city of Warsaw. Your capital city is no longer here. But one day, together, we will build it again, and there will be new houses, but you will not come. I wrote this, as I said, in June 1945. I think once or twice there were raids on Warsaw, and instead of being frightened, we were all absolutely delighted. It seemed that the war is coming to an end. The invasion in June, feeling that instead of saying next spring, maybe the war will end within weeks, if not months. Even the fact that the Russians were advancing was positive. We would liberate Warsaw. So there was great activity in the underground at that time. The field hospitals were being set up. We were carrying field dressings through the streets of Warsaw, where there were still German patrols. But it just seemed that the war was ending. I can't remember how I heard, but being not quite 14, I was not given any actual posting for the Warsaw Rising. But somehow I knew, and I can't remember how, that it was due to start on the 1st of August. Knowing it, I decided to go and see my mother, who lived in the same street, because I was with Mrs. Tchaikovsky at one end of Kuleska Street, and my mother was living with the Novodvorskys at the other end of the same street. So I went to see her, and as I was walking, I saw a red and white armband which somebody must have dropped on their way to their meeting point. There were Germans walking in the street, and I dropped a handkerchief on it and picked it up. And I was so thrilled to see a sign of the Polish underground on the street. I went to see my mother and I said to her, the Warsaw Rising is starting today. Do you want me to stay with you? And she said, no, there's no need. You know, if things turn bad, you can always come. It's only the other end of the street. And I went back. We didn't know how things were going to develop. In fact, the part of the street where I was immediately in Polish hands. It faced a garden where the Germans were, but the other end of the street where my mother lived was overrun by the Germans straight away. And within a few days, all the inhabitants were taken by the Germans and lined up around the German tanks attacking Polish positions. But of course I knew nothing of it. But I couldn't get to my mother. Well, the Germans were using artillery shells to blast the front windows of the house we were living in, so you couldn't go into the house. So we literally left in what we were standing. We had German agents and the so-called Volksdeutsch on the roofs, shooting down wherever they could. So things were pretty awful. There was behind us, there was a command post where I went one day wanting to join as a messenger girl. I was there when we had the first bombardment. It must have been the second or third of August. And somebody said, oh, it's only little incendiaries. Well, the whole place started shaking and bombs started coming down. So I was there for a little while. I can't remember, and I was running messages or doing whatever. And then the Germans were attacking this part, so I moved back and I went to Mrs. Bedeska, whose daughter was in another part of Warsaw, which was again completely inaccessible. And I said, you know, I want to do something. I was told I was too young, but I said, never mind. and I joined what was known as the Women's Social Services, who were part of the underground, but were mainly young girls. So we were taking what food there was and milk to mothers with young babies through the cellars, taking posts around, all sorts of messenger services, who were moving around all the time. It was pretty tough. We had very little food. There was no fresh food whatsoever. And we were constantly under bombardment. I mean, the Germans didn't have to use many planes. They had an airfield just outside Warsaw, so they were going back to refuel, reload, and coming back. And at the same time, there were artillery shells, which were called the mooing cows, where you could hear them, sort of half a dozen artillery shells linked together. And that went on whole day, from morning till late at night. It was pretty scary, and I must say, I was petrified. What food we had was mainly a sort of what we used to call spit soup, because it had oats in it, which were not cleared properly. So it was absolutely revolting, but we were hungry. And we were just dependent on what stores we captured from the Germans or what people would give us. But the spirit was wonderful. You know, everybody, quite different from the ghetto, because here everybody was united. People would give you what they had. It was very, very different. Everybody was against the common enemy. And then on the 1st of September, as I said, I met the younger Leonard boy, Wojtek, as I was going to get some water, because the Germans had cut off all water from Warsaw. So you had to go to standpipes. And that wasn't very safe, because if you're standing in a queue, very often you would get shelled. And then I can't remember what day in September, but in the early part of September, I was in the Powiśle part of Warsaw when we were overrun by the Germans. I think I was taking some food. So we had, the first thing was to take off your armband and pretend that you had nothing to do, you're just a civilian. And there was a ceasefire, and they marched us out to the transit cup in Pruszków, which was quite a distance. It was many hours walk, and we went through the fields where there were allotments, and I remember stuffing my pockets with tomatoes for the first time I had seen a fruit or a vegetable, because it all got squashed and made an awful mess with the only outfit I had. But literally, throughout the period, we all had to wear what we had on the first day. And my shoes, which were new, I put on a new pair of shoes for the rising, they were absolutely in shreds, cut through the ruins over which we had to walk all the time. The only thing I had with me was my knapsack on my belt, in which I had a length. It's important, it will come up and show you how important this afterwards. There was a length material. We had captured German stores, and the boys cut up navy blue cloth and white cloth and gave it to us, to the girls, for uniforms after the rising. By that time, the Russians were on the other side of the Vistula and weren't doing anything to help us. So we were marched to this camp in Pruszków, which was a transit camp on the site of an old railway works. And the sheds were the old railway sheds with the rails inside. There was nothing to lie on. You just lay there. And I was completely alone. I had been separated from anybody I knew. So I was just on my own. I was about two weeks short of my 14th birthday. And I was in pretty awful state because through the lack of fresh food, I had terrible boils all over my legs. So my hair, which was long at the time, was full of debris. So in the Prusnik camp, I managed to get a knife from somebody and I just hacked off my plants, which was the best I could do. The next morning, there was what the Germans called a selection. But nobody knew, really, what was going on, which group you wanted to be in. You went right or you went left. But which was the right side to be on was a mystery. I don't speak German, but I know a few words. And there were two Germans standing there, one with a revolver and the other one with a sort of stick, this way and that way. And when it came to me, in my very broken German, I said, "I'm only 13. And he was pushing me towards a group of young people, and I said, "That's not good. Can't be good." So and by that time, I think I was so depressed, and my nerves were absolutely in shreds after the constant bombardment of 5 or 6 weeks. I said, "Well, if he shoots, he shoots." And I ran under his arm to the other group, where there were older people and children. Well, we got loaded on cattle trucks. And the truck I was on had an open top. And there were a couple of other young people who, like myself, somehow managed to change. The train set off. We still had no idea what we were going to do. Have we done the right thing? On the way, people were throwing bread to us and apples, you know, as the transport was passing. And we were just looking out to see what stations were passing, where we were going. And we were going southwest. And all sorts of rumors, you know, a large group of people, "Oh, we're going for the concentration camp. No, 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 they're going to let us out." But nobody knew for sure. And then we passed one station, Skernivica, I think it was, and then Kolushki. I said, "Oh, I know somebody who did not come from here." And we stopped at the siding for the night. It was very dark. There were some Germans and German guards on the train, but I don't quite know where they were. I can't remember. In any case, the three of us, young ones, said, "We're going to jump." And everybody, people started shouting at us and saying, "No, you can't do it. You'll escape. Or they will shoot you. They will shoot us if you escape." All that sort of thing. Well, we did. And we did get shot. But we were out in the countryside and we split up. And there was a question, what do I do next? We went to the nearest village where they had already some people from Warsaw, because the Germans, I don't know, it's possible that this transport would have been let out further along the line. Because somewhere, and people were sort of billeted on villages who greatly resented it, because they found themselves with people whom they didn't know, the townies whom they had to feed, who had no money. So when I arrived without official orders, they said, "On your bike, off you go." So I said, "Right, well, I know of this estate, not in the area, I had no idea how far, where the Novodvorsky's old nanny was housekeeper. And one of the daughters of that family was with me in the Warsaw Island. I said, I'm going there. So I started hitchhiking, walking, and sleeping where I could in barns. So I came to some little village and went into a shop to ask for a piece of bread. And the shopkeeper said to me, you're from Warsaw? I said, yes. He said, can you read and write? I said, yes. So she said, why don't you go to my daughter? You can teach the children to read and write. So I said, fine. She wrote me a little slip of paper in very poor Polish, awful spelling. Take her in. She will teach the kids. So I arrived. They looked at me and said, okay. But the next morning, they didn't want me to teach the children. They wanted me to take the cows to pasture. Well, I had never been near a cow in all my life. And the cows wouldn't do what I told them. And the children were laughing at me and giving me good advice, get on the cow and then the others will follow and that sort of thing. So I got thrown from the car. And I got so fed up that the whip which I had been given, instead of the cows, descended on the kids. I lost my job. So I said that again. And I finally did make it to the estate, where when they saw me, they couldn't believe their eyes. I was in such a state. I had all these boils on my legs, and I looked absolutely dreadful. So I got put in the bath and banged off to bed till I started mending. But that was relatively close to Warsaw, which meant that anybody who managed to get out of Warsaw or was looking for somewhere to stay and knew the family was descending of them. And that what happened also permanent. All the manor houses were crammed to the attics with people getting out of Warsaw and needing a roof over their heads. So the housekeeper said she will get in touch with an aunt of Mrs. Novodvorsky and ask who lived further away and see if they would help me. And they said yes, so I traveled. So I moved on. I arrived there, and there was Mrs. Novodvorsky's mother, eldest daughter and youngest daughter, who told me that my mother had been alive because the tanks which went against the Polish positions were the Poles counterattacked and liberated the people. And she had spent the first months of the rising in the old city. But they didn't know what had happened to her after the old city collapsed at the end of August. So I knew at least that the first month she had survived. Because imagine my surprise, but months later, suddenly, a letter arrives from my mother asking about Mrs. Novodvorska and her middle daughter, my friend, with whom she had been in Pruszków, but from whom she had become separated. And of course, then I knew that my mother was alive. So I said, I think I can't remember now. She knew that it was my mother, but she wrote back and said that Mrs. Novodvorsky and her daughter had been taken into Germany for labor, forced labor. But I am here. And if she wants to join me, she's welcome to come. By that time, Warsaw had collapsed, and the place was again inundated with friends and relations. So Mrs. Novoselova's mother, her sister and son, and myself were moved and billeted on the local village. And then my mother arrived. Well, we still didn't have any clothes, so I had sold this material which I had from the Warsaw Rising. I bought some what passed for wool, but it wasn't. It was made of wooden fibers, but that was all the wool we had at that time. Turned myself to knit, made myself a jumper and a pair of socks, and went to my mother and said, "When you come, I'll make you a jumper." But when she arrived, again, we were getting too crowded. So we were billeted on another peasant, it was an old woman and her daughter. And we were in extremely primitive condition. My mother, who was a very tidy and clean lady, had insisted that regardless of whether the water was cold or hot, we had to wash every day, was regarded as someone very strange. And the famous saying of the old peasant woman who said, "I am more than 80 years old, I've never washed my bottom." Thank God for the dogs first. Anyway, some peasants gave us food. We used to go around with a basket asking for brown coal to keep warm. I painted postcards for Christmas and for Easter and sold them in the local co-op. I was giving French lessons. I can't remember. I think it was the Schumann's children. But then people were kind as well. You would hear that somebody had killed a pig in the next village. And if you went there, they would give you some bits and pieces. But that was quite dangerous because we had to walk through woods which were full of partisans. And the partisans were the communist partisans as well, and very right-wing partisans. In fact, the husband and the son-in-law of the family in the manor house were executed by them before the war ended, because they said that they were supporting the official underground. So going through the woods was not much fun at night. But when you need food, you do it. Our source of money at that time was that in the ghetto, I had quite prominent 2 franc keys. And I had some orthodontic work done, which included 4 crowns to support the brace. So we went to the dentist and had the gold crowns removed and sold them, which gave us some money. Then in January 45, the Russians arrived. They were quite wild. There were lorry loads of Russians, and all they wanted to know was Berlin. And they were just shouting, going through the village and shouting, "Who's at Berlin? Which is, where is Berlin?" I mean, that was miles from Berlin, but everybody was frightened of them. But then some of them were kind. Because I remember a lorry arriving on the way back from Germany, full of clothing. And the Russians said, "Help yourselves." I mean, they got it from the Germans. So that's where I got my new red and black blouse, which is on the photograph, which was taken at that time.